Coming up next, in-depth news analysis. You're listening to Korea 24 from KBS World Radio.
It is necessary to carry out on-site investigation on the current status of the Fukushima plants and its contaminated water, as well as the impact on ecological system in objective and scientific ways. Based on the findings, it is important to set up standards and methods for the disposal of Fukushima contaminated water. This adheres to...
Although some, there are criticisms which are not based on facts and scientific evidence is against our activities. Japan strongly hopes that all countries conduct discussions impartially and rationally.
Those were comments made by South Korea's first Vice Minister of Science and ICT, Moon Myeok, followed by Japan's Science and Technology Minister, Naokazu Takemoto. They were both giving keynote speeches at the General Conference of the International Atomic Energy Agency, currently being held in Vienna. This meeting comes after Tokyo's outgoing environment minister said earlier this month that there is no other option but to release contaminated water from the Fukushima nuclear plant into the ocean because storage space will run out by 2022. Currently, there is said to be 1 million tons of radioactive water being stored in over 1,000 tanks. For more expert opinion on the potential release of this radioactive water from the Fukushima nuclear plant, we now talk to Dr. Ken Bissler, senior scientist in marine chemistry and geochemistry at the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution in the US. Thank you for speaking to us today.
My pleasure.
So, Dr. Bissler, before we begin, can you briefly tell us about yourself and the research you've done in the past? I understand you began your career in oceanography and studied the spread of radiation from Chernobyl into the Black Sea.
Yeah, I've been working for over 30 years specializing in the fate of radioactivity from any number of sources. Initially, the nuclear testing in the 50s and 60s. That was my thesis work in 1986. We tracked the releases from Chernobyl. I've been also to many sites where there's local contamination sources. And we also look at natural radioactivity. And so that's a bit of background on what I specialize in, and I had those skills in 2011 when the Fukushima disaster happened, and we responded very quickly to that as well.
Right, so you've been working on finding out more about how the Fukushima nuclear disaster has been affecting the oceans around that region, correct?
Yeah, we've been doing research cruises to the area, working, collaborating with Japanese scientists, international experts on what the levels are in the ocean water, in the seafloor, and in marine biota.
Right, so let's go back to what that former environment minister said. He said that there's no other option but to release this contaminated water. Dr. Bissler, what do we know about the water that is being stored in these tankers at the plant? And what was your reaction to the minister's comments?
Well, it's been discussed for several years now. As they continue to keep these reactors cool, even though they've molten down and no longer functioning, they need cooling water. Every day, about 150 tons of water enters the buildings through cracks and breaks groundwater, essentially, and that has to be removed and stored because it becomes contaminated when it reaches those hot materials, the nuclear fuel that's still in the reactors. Mm-hmm. So this water is decontaminated, initially clean, but it's very difficult to move all of the isotopes, and in particular the contaminant remaining behind of concern is tritium. And so this is a very difficult-to-remove contaminant, and they're looking for ways to dispose of this material because they think engineering-wise they'll never be able to reduce the level of tritium down to levels below concern in terms of a decontamination removal process. Mm. And so the oceans are one of the five or six proposals have been made of what to do with the water and into the future.
So can you tell us a bit more about tritium? Why is it so dangerous and what are the effects?
Well, In essence, it's the least dangerous of the isotopes that we are concerned with. In fact, there's been very little study on it. Every reactor, nuclear power plant in the world, there's several hundred releases tritium into the ocean, into the atmosphere. There's natural sources, believe it or not, of that isotope, come from cosmic rays and nitrogen gas in our atmosphere. And there still remains far more tritium in the ocean from the weapons testing. So that isotope and just the whole concept of dilution and putting in the ocean is, I think, only deemed acceptable by some because of its lower health effects than things like cesium and strontium and plutonium that you may have heard about.
Mm. So what happens if this water, contaminated water, is released? Where would the water travel in? How does that affect the marine life and seafood?
Well, we know a fair bit about the ocean currents in the area, both before the accident and very specifically radioactivity released from Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plants. And contaminant like tritium moves with the ocean currents, and it's diluted, so the concentrations get lower and lower the further you get from the source. And the direction is actually outward into the Pacific. It would move south along the coast. That's what we saw in 2011. And then move with the Kuroshio, a very strong ocean current that actually will move that to the east across the Pacific off the shore of Japan. So none of this contaminated water would reach, for example, Korea. There's no path. It's actually a barrier, this Kuroshio current, for the direct transport of contaminated water to the south of Japan. It moves across the Pacific, taking something like 4 years is when we first detected the 2011 releases on the west coast of North America.
So that would be the water, but and you say that won't affect the Korean Peninsula, but isn't also the concern that the radiated water will contaminate the fish, and the fish can move to different regions and perhaps towards the Korean Peninsula and other places such as Australia and Guam?
Well, if you look today at the levels of cesium in fish off Japan, for the last 4 years anyway, the levels have gone down to the point where none of the fish outside of 20 kilometers from that site are above the strict limits that Japan puts on their seafood. So, yes, it would show up in marine life, but part of tritium, it's basically a hydrogen atom, one proton, two neutrons, if you want to be more technical, but it behaves a lot like water. It would be part of the H2O, the hydrogen and water. And therefore, unlike some other contaminants of concern, this moves very quickly in and out of the fish. So it would be only a matter of days before that contaminant would go in the fish and be released if they swam into waters further from that site. Mm. So it's not something that bioaccumulates. We think of mercury in tunas being high because every level of the food chain is more concentrated. This is not the case for tritium. Again, one of the reasons why it's considered less dangerous to release. On the other hand, again, there would be other radionuclides. There may be other contaminants that come along with the tritium. So the tritium itself moves quickly, primarily with the currents, very little accumulation in marine life or marine sediments that we would have to be as concerned about.
Right, so you said in the, you talk about tritium, but then you also talked about cesium. So in the tankers that are holding this contaminated water, I mean, how much do we actually know? And are the levels that are there, could it be dangerous? Especially if we release that much amount.
Right. So, you know, one of the first questions is how much is in each tank, and not just tritium, but a multitude of, we call them radionuclides, radioactive contaminants. And right now, it was only about a year ago that we heard from TEPCO, the operators, and now cleaning up those plants, that there were levels, measured levels of other radioactive contaminants other than tritium. The amount of tritium itself even though it sounds very high, a million tons in 1,000 tanks, that's still the amount of tritium is not high relative to other nuclear power plants that operate in Korea, the U.S., around the world, China. What concerns me are these new numbers that are about a year old now that suggest that in some of the tanks, the levels of strontium-90, ruthenium-106, cobalt-60, I hate to be technical here, but that's really the crux of the matter, are elevated over the amounts that they're allowed to discharge. So immediately the question is then exactly those levels and the amount of water at each level, another thing that is characteristic of the numbers I've seen, are that they vary by quite a large amount, factors of many tens of thousands between tank to tank. So we had a imperfect cleanup system that operated to different degrees, you know, in the first days of the emergency and the months that followed, that was modified over time. And so different generations of water during this 8.5 years have different amounts of these contaminants. And the plan, again, verbally, I've heard anyway, that is to remove these other contaminants. It is easier to remove things like cobalt and strontium than tritium. So the attention has been to tritium, the most difficult to remove isotope, but it's not the most dangerous contaminant still in those tanks.
Right. I understand working with Tokyo and TEPCO, the company that runs the facility, there's been some concerns about transparency. For example, I understand you've been working with Japanese scientists and locals in Fukushima, but have you been able to perhaps make readings yourself of what's in those tanks? And have others been able to, outside third party, been able to take measurements from those tanks?
We're working in the ocean. You know, were there new releases, major releases, even small ones, we can detect them. So that's both samples I bring back to Woods Hole and in collaboration analyzed by Japanese and other scientists. I would like to see what you mentioned as some independent confirmation of those tanks. It's not that much effort compared to, well, not knowing. You need to know, you know, not just the level, so how much of the contaminant is per liter, but how many liters are at each isotope in each tank. So an independent accounting. And then you would want a release plan. You probably don't want to release all of those waters on a single day or a single month. I've seen nothing about that. So the transparency is an issue. It still is an issue. It has improved with a new website talking about these other contaminants, but this came 7 years after the accident. So you could argue that some of the decisions and what I hear from other agencies, IAEA and JAEA and others, are, you know, always directed to the preposition that the only radioactive contaminant of concern is tritium. And from the numbers I've seen, that doesn't seem to be the case. And so we do want to see those numbers. And if there is a release plan, also, would you want monitoring programs of the seawater, the seafloor, the marine life, of not just tritium, but these other radioisotopes, because they behave differently. Some of them do concentrate differently in seafood. Strontium concentrates in bones as it mimics the element calcium that we have in bones and fish bones, and can stay there for years rather than days, as we discussed for tritium. So each isotope, each contaminant, has kind of a different fate in the ocean and marine life. And so I would really like to know more about each tank, independent confirmation, what's in them. And then if they were to remove them, we need to see those results and then hear what the plan would be for how much would be released each day. And then you could make an assessment of what the impact would be. I can't actually do that today.
Sure. South Korean officials have called on the international community to work together to decide on how Japan needs to move ahead with deciding on whether to release the contaminated water into the ocean or not. I mean, would you agree with that? Would this has to be something that Japan really has to work together with the international community? And, you know, finally, can releasing water be a viable option, although with strong caveats?
It's certainly worth considering, because other options, we've done some calculations that, you know, you could store this, for example, on land, and 60 years later, 97% of the tritium would have decayed away. It would be gone. Many of these isotopes on the list that I see that are still in tanks decay relatively fast. You know, you need several decades, but it's been already 8.5 years.
Hmm.
Now, that comes with the risk of another earthquake or tsunami that would break apart tanks and buildings and have a catastrophic release. Now, I'm not saying that would happen. I know there are tanks and structures that can withstand earthquakes. These tanks were not, from what I've read, anyway, built to those standards. This was a temporary measure. But they will have to do something. Every week they need about one more tank to contain the water from that past week. There's 1,000 tanks. If you were to store for example, 60 more years, you'd have about 3,000 more tanks to put somewhere.
Mm.
I have heard arguments that there's no room, so this becomes an issue with the nuclear plant operator, but yet around that plant site are a lot of areas that will not be inhabited by the public, and so they could be repurposed for storing some of this. I don't completely agree with the argument that there is no storage space, because there's certainly in that region, just outside the boundaries, large areas where there are no structures, no schools, no houses, there would be places to put them if that were the best choice. So we're not getting all of the answers about where it could be stored, what's in the tanks, what the release plan would be, confirmation independently of what's in each tank and what would remain when they get ready to release it. So I just see these as being more questions that would need to be answered before you can come up with your final plan.
Sure. Something definitely does need to be done, and everyone needs to help Japan solve this issue. But Japan also needs to respond with transparency as it affects not just Japan, it will affect other countries and the oceans around the world. We've been speaking to Dr. Ken Bissler from the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution. Thank you for your insights today.
Well, thank you for taking the time to listen.